we go. It's We Talk Comics, episode number 92, Character Spotlight, breaking down the Batman. I am Mo, and I'm going to get my three co-hosts to introduce themselves, doing their best. They can either introduce themselves doing their best pirate version of introducing themselves or not. We'll see. We'll see how this goes. Brett, how are you?
I'm a pirate, Brett.
That was his best, folks. Keith?
I'd be walking the plank. See, and my phone's ringing now. I was quite clear at the time chat. I was starting the episode.
Your phone walks the plank. That's what it needs to do.
Nathan Begorra.
The Begorra, yeah. Wow, you are the oddest pirate I've ever heard.
And Chris, how are you doing there?
Chris Montcracker.
All right, then.
Well, this would be true if you met Chris. So, anyways, it's We Talk Comics. Like I say, we're breaking down the Batman character spotlight. And probably see a lot of these in the next little while because I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be talking that. And, of course, we're going to doing We Views on a few books this week. But we're going to open this thing up as we tend to do. We go to a Comicosity-sponsored the weekly news with Cub Reporter K. Now, of course, that's not all we can talk about for Comicosity. We can go into it a little more. We do have a special guest who wants to come on and give his thoughts and opinions on Comicosity.
Hey, how's it going there? It's Norm here. And anyway, so you know, I'm on the road there, and you know, get my comic news and Comicosity. I'm like, that's the best place I can go there to get the news on the comics, the We Views and stuff. And anyways, Comicosity. I was going on there and learning stuff. You know, like the time my dad. I don't know if any of you ever do this. Yeah. And you have a parent there or anything like that, you know, a dad or a mom, and, you know, and they teach you stuff. And my parents said, I found out the toothbrush there is on the, actually, it's it came from Georgia. It makes a lot of sense there, actually, because that'd be any other state, it probably would have been called the teeth brush. But anyway, so there, my dad's, you know, he teaches me to brush the teeth, you know, and I sneak behind the set, you know, and I start smoking, you know, and there I am, smoking, and there I am, banging the set, and my dad comes,
I really should have taken that call.
You totally should have.
That's an awesome parent.
And so anyways, there I am, my dad's giant head, you know, is just comes floating around the corner there, you know, and it's like his head, you know, I'm like, what the H, you know, and it's because it's just a giant head, you know, and it's just floats around the corner, and the rest of his body then is kind of right, pretty soon after we get the rest of that, and so, anyways, what happens is he sees me smoking, so, you know, that's, he's like, he's going to teach me a lesson, you know, and he gives me a pack of cigarettes there, you know, and actually three of them, he makes me smoke the whole thing, you know, the whole pack of cigarettes there, and so, anyways, that's why I started smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. So that kind of backfired. Anyways, Comicosity is where I go when I'm not smoking. I go to Comicosity. And now the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
That was the worst pirate impression ever.
Black Jack Norm MacDonald.
How long did you practice that, man?
In my head, about once.
About once.
Well,
about once.
Mo has managed to waste not only his time but ours.
It's kind of a guesstimate of one. That's...
Hey guys, we're not going to feature. We're not going to get any more guests on in the future if you guys keep on running them down like that.
Well, shucks.
Anyways, what's happening with the news, Keith?
All right. Well, we are getting a Walking Dead spin-off TV series, which will kick off in 2015, presumably running the part of the year that Walking Dead is not already on TV. And this will follow a completely different set of characters in a completely different location.
But doing the exact same stuff.
It's well, the apocalypse, man. What else is there to do?
Survive.
I'm hoping they can find a building and then have a lot of soap opera angst
Yeah, you find a building.
Save budget.
And then, yeah, so you find a building. Hopefully, this is how I see this going. I'm just guessing. They'll find a building, and then they'll go in it, and there'll be somebody else already in that building, and that person will want them to leave. Then they'll come to an agreement. Then somebody will die, and then at the end of the day, zombies will run them out, and they'll have to find a whole new building. And then the next season will start. But it'll be good.
I read a summary of Walking Dead one time that every six issue, Rick meets five people and four of them die.
Yes.
And one of the original group dies.
Yeah, and the new person joins.
Cycle out a new character every six issues.
Because they're being far too critical.
Walking Dead.
Oh, it's true. It doesn't mean it's not good, but it's totally true.
Oh, it's awesome. I just read the second Governor novel, which is... terrific.
I picked up one of the Governor novels, actually.
Yeah, I just finished Road to Woodbury today. Which is great. They're actually based on the comics, not on the TV shows.
Oh, okay.
Exceptional. And it was extra cool. Well, not to be outdone on gimmick covers, Marvel is bringing back the Accutate cover for Wolverine Origin 2.
Goody.
This is written by Karen Gillan and... art and Accutate cover by...
Oh, sorry, what book did you say this is for?
Origin 2.
Seriously, then it's not the origin, is it? Like, can you... you really want to break this down. I thought that's what you said. I'm like, I must have misheard that. Because when something's the origin, that's the origin. Origin 47.
Well, this is Wolverine. I mean, let's be honest, right?
Why don't we just call it Wolverine New Origin 2013?
Origin deleted scenes.
Yeah, something like that. All right.
Accutate.
I took away the focus of the story, Keith. Accutate.
Accutate.
Good. You just wanted to say that, didn't you?
Could be acetate. I don't know.
Which one was this?
Which one was what?
That gimmick cover. What was its gimmick?
Marvel's was probably the most famous book that had that.
Yes.
Ruins also had it. I think what else would have had it?
Yeah, so it's like a plastic cover over top thing that is that?
Yeah, see-through thing. So they put design elements on the Accutate, and then keep the image clear inside.
All right.
What I can't wait for is, when are they going to invent the digital special cover? I mean, I thought Heroes Month, they could have whipped up some moving thing or something like that for the digital copies. Oh, well, I think that would rock.
I think the thing is, people don't... You know, I think you might be onto something there, and probably somebody will do something sometime. I bet you it won't come from one of the major publishers. Probably somebody will think outside the box like you, who's a smaller publisher, and the major publishers will pick it up. That happens often. But, you know, I do think it's partially also, though, that the idea is that these are extra cool and they're extra collectible, and people put them on their shelves. And I don't know that people still view digital. I think they've kind of viewed digital like, okay, I have it now, I can read it. I can go and get it again anytime or read it again anytime. It's not like the same as... I don't think they have the same ownership type of cool collectible, you know? I don't know. When I'm getting stuff digitally, I don't feel like I'm collecting it in the same way. I feel like I'm reading it and I can always read it. It's a little different mentality for me.
There is a... There's one of the Comixology submit books, Watson and Holmes, which is quite good, but they have a variant book.
What's it about?
It is a difficult concept to explain, I gotta be honest with you. But they have the first two issues are out.
Jungle or on Earth or Mars?
But there are also they also have a noir version that is the same issue but uncolored. So just as a black and white. So yeah, you actually get a variant of the same book. Kind of neat.
I tell you what won't work. An acetate cover as a digital edition.
No, what I was thinking, the special covers for like Exo Man of War, where you had a little guy talking or something like that. Why does that come on my digital comic?
I don't know. The AR stuff finally does. It wasn't for a while.
It's just they don't think outside the box, you know. Like I say, it's not what they do generally as a general rule.
All right, moving on. We missed the story last week, so let's cover it now. Geoff Johns is leaving Aquaman at issue 25.
25 issues nowadays is about as long and running as you're going to see from most characters on a. Most people on a character, I think, so.
In related news, Aquaman sales go in the tank.
Have they announced who's replacing him?
I'd assume Lemire.
I'd assume Robert Venditti.
It is Jeff Parker.
So close.
That's not going to be good.
And we're getting Christos Gage on Flash. Up there as well. He starts at issue 26.
Francis Manipulo, is that the name of
Manipulo
that?
And Buccellato are moving on to an unannounced project. Okay. Presumably, we're going to get a wave of titles when Forever Evil wraps up.
Okay.
Early next year. So they're moving on. Funny with all of the DC must be a horrible place to work stuff. We've got. Two Marvel writers that are walking across the street here.
Well, it doesn't mean Marvel's not a horrible place to work.
They're all horrible. I'm sure. How bad do you want to write comics? Hello?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'll go write it for that third guy who'll pay me a lot.
Yeah.
We are also getting Cully Hamner doing work on Animal Man and Aaron Lopresti on Detective Comics. So a lot of creator changes here.
It doesn't sound to me like we have a lot of people with the exclusive contracts, though. I mean, they're working for both companies, or at least is that what we're seeing here?
I don't know how many are on exclusives anymore.
A big thing for a while.
Yeah. Well, Parker wasn't, because Parker's been doing the Batman 66 for a couple of months now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who's on. Yeah, I don't know who is on exclusives these days. I know that was one of the things when Gail Simone got fired and rehired, her contract had just run out.
Mm-hmm.
So. Seems the announcements we hear about exclusive contracts these days are coming from the smaller publishers who are picking up some of these tired of working for the big two creators.
That's because it's the best deal for them to sign them to an exclusive contract.
We're also getting a new writer on Shadow Man. Speaking of smaller companies, Peter Milligan is taking over at issue 13X, which will be a bagged issue. It's actually being bagged with Bleeding Cool magazine. So Shadow Man 13X, which is an extra in continuity Shadow Man story, and then he will take over properly in Shadow Man 13.
I like Milligan, and Shadow Man is the type of thing you do well. Mm-hmm. I might actually jump on that book. I was thinking about picking up some back issues this week anyway, because they're cheap.
They
are cheap, yeah. If you hear this before the sale is over, almost everything from Valiant since the relaunch is 99 cents on Comixology. Time to catch up. I've heard that Valiant's a good company. I read this article on Comicosity about how great Valiant is.
Yeah. I read it too.
Twice. Actually, no. Probably at least more times than that.
200 times.
Let's make
self-editing.
I'm going to make a quick apology to Joshua Hale-Vyalkov, who actually writes iVampire, as opposed to... who I gave credit to last week.
And Draco.
Mark Draco. I wondered when you said it. I was like, "How? If he had been writing that, I would have thought I would have noticed." And, but you know.
Sorry, Mr. Mr. Fiala.
I'd like to give no credit to Joshua Hale Fiala for actually writing iVampire.
What are the sales of iVampire there, Mr. Sales Boy there, Brett?
Well, it doesn't run, so...
canceled 6 months, so rough.
Yeah.
They have steady.
Gone down since then. But steady. They're going up or down.
I will give you that. It has stayed rock solid as far as...
It is not fluctuating.
How bad were they? How bad was it when it went down? Was it really rough, like for DC, or just rough in general?
Well, DC's cutoff right now is around 11,000 copies ish.
Except for the poor Green Team, which is actually at like 8,000.
Well, what the DC and Marvel are both doing right now is structuring their books at about 6 or 8 issues to test, and no matter how bad it is, they'll run about that length so that they have enough for a trade paperback. Nothing so far in the New 52 has come out shy of that. Morbius has been running way below Marvel's cutoff, and it has been canceled, but it's going to be enough that they can fill a trade with it.
That's a smart strategy.
Yeah, it's kind of... miniseries don't work anymore. The miniseries model has completely failed. So
within the Big Two.
Yeah, in the Big Two. I mean, it's the only model that everyone else, like Dark Horse only uses miniseries, basically. But for the Big Two, aside from event books, it's pretty rare now to see miniseries. Marvel does a bit more, but they're usually
they do a few.
X-Men or a Thanos. It's not a testing ground. It's just a step away from doing a regular series. And Thanos isn't a regular series character. So I expect we'll see. Green Team is really on life support. A couple other books are probably going to be making way here the next couple months.
Yeah, I can't remember who is it that writes Green Team. Wasn't it a pair of people, and they actually have quite a bit of buzz?
Yeah, Franco. Yeah,
Franco. And you know, for all the complaints that there are no fun books in the New 52, it's a fun book in the New 52. So is Larfleeze, and the sales are terrible.
Yeah. I mean,
Larfleeze sales aren't good. That sucks.
Oh, that does suck. That's my favorite book every month. I think more Larfleeze. We just have to put him in everything.
Yeah, but I didn't enjoy Larfleeze until he got his own book. So, like, that was the problem.
Yeah, I mean, Threshold tanked really fast.
Oh, yeah.
Six or eight issues. Yeah, that's kind of the model. You just fail fast. Get about 8 issues, you get a nice trade, and take the bits that work to somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I just read the GI Combat trade, which reads great. Haunted Tank, Unknown Soldier, and War of the Time Forgot. Dinosaurs, soldiers. It's awesome. And one last news story. Speaking of Canadian treasures... the Canadian postage stamps and commemorative coins of Superman's anniversary have come out. 75th anniversary of Superman, as some of you may know, who have seen a Heritage Moment that isn't entirely accurate, but it's close enough. Joe Shuster, co-creator of Superman, was Canadian, and Canada's marking this with several different stamps and several different commemorative coins.
It's very unlike Canadians to take something that isn't Canadian, that's something American, and claim it to be their own.
I still think it's half ours. It's more ours than John. Hey. Is.
They can make Argo, we can have a freaking stamp.
Hey, look, I'm sick and tired of people at work telling me, you know, basketball was invented in Canada. Like, no, it wasn't. It was invented by an expatriate who had lived in America and got an American citizenship in America.
I'm just proud that we found a good use for a postage stamp.
Yes, yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
The phone's still ours, right?
Pardon me?
The telephone's still ours, right?
Well, sort of. I mean, Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone here, but I believe he was British.
Yeah.
So. He was here. I've been to his house, actually.
Hey, look, everybody, let's be honest. Canada hasn't really given the world anything, but we're clean and friendly, so come visit.
NBC's awesome.
Hockey?
Hockey? Hockey, actually, they were playing a version of hockey in Finland before they played it in Canada, but that's okay.
Mo Can just works very hard to tear down everything Canadian.
Canadian whiskey.
He tears down everything, man.
Yeah.
Christmas in the stampede.
I hate those. And Halloween coming up, I hate Halloween. Anyways.
I bought a book of the stamps, and now I don't actually have anyone to mail letters to. I did have someone on Twitter ask me to mail him, to send him a letter so he could have one of the stamps. And I politely declined, but then all I could think was, I believe he just asked me to give him a dollar.
Yeah.
Someone I've never spoken to on Twitter before just asked me for a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
That was a curious request.
Mm-hmm. they are so many things I'm trying not to say right now.
They are for letters posted within Canada.
At Looney. Anyways, all right. There we go. We're going to move on unless you have anything else in the news.
And that's the news.
Anyway, I got an item there. It's Norm here again.
I thought you were doing Bob Dylan when you said
Yeah, that. Actually, so did I.
Still Norm. And,
I thought it was some kind of stroke.
Bob
actually.
Dylan, I understand, is going to be a future guest on the show. But anyways, introducing Comic Constantly. But I just wanted to say there, Keith, I don't know, you know this. I used to do this thing, Saturday Night Live news update there, the weekend update there. And I did the news. And I just want to give you a piece of advice because I heard you do the news there. And, you know, and what you got to do there is every news story at the end, just you got to throw out, it'll be like, yeah, Canada's got a postage stamp with Superman, and what this means is Madonna is a whore. That's what you got to do. You got to always, everything you got to end with. Madonna is a whore, OJ is a murderer, Michael Jackson is a pedophile, or Pauly Shore is an unfunny comedian. Do that, and it's gold.
That's why Norm MacDonald has stayed timeless.
That right there. Is, and why he's currently not on TV.
I'd like to take this moment to announce my retirement from We Talk Comics, and and I'll just allow Norm MacDonald to take my spot then.
Anyways, moving on, breaking down the Bat Man, because Batman has back broke. Man, I'm watching this. What do you call it here? This one of these animated DC animated movies, the one Doom. Have any of you seen that?
Yep.
Justice League Doom. Yeah. And in it, they have Bane in it, and they keep on referring to how he broke his back. Is that such an iconic moment that they think that everybody who's the most casual fan knows it? Because I don't think so. Like, it's not, you know, is it bigger than I think it is, or what? I guess it was a big event at the time.
I think it was a pretty big event.
It was the follow-up to Superman's death.
Yeah.
It always seemed like to me, I kind of group it with the Clone Saga more than I group it with Death of Superman.
Yeah.
Because it was one that it really didn't work, and then they tried to get out of it as fast as they could.
Yeah.
Well, it only took like 80 issues to get out of it.
The Night Quest went on forever, Night Quest and Nightfall, and then they went into Prodigal, which was Prodigal setting up Son, this whole thing of Dick Grayson that ended up being four freaking issues.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Bruce was back and hey, yeah, spoilers, sorry. didn't mean to give away the ending of Nightfall there that it's like it never happened.
It really was like it never happened. But that I don't know. I mean, they just still casually refer to it as like a throwaway thing. Like, you broke his back. It's like, if he did that, it should be a big deal. I mean, don't get me wrong, the latest issue of Injustice, I mean, it's referenced again in a different way. But if you didn't know that his back had been previously broken, it just meant more if you knew, and it wouldn't have hurt it if you didn't know. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of weird. But anyways.
Does the film kind of push it, though? I mean, is the film why they would kind of...
You mean the latest one with Christian Bale?
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. Shocker.
The other guys who do watch movies.
It's there. But I think the reason it's referenced in Doom is Bane is a hard sell. If you don't have Bane being the guy who broke the bat. You have a big guy in a mask.
Yeah, you wonder why there's a Mexican wrestler showing up.
Yeah, really, you have to give Bane some sort of
I'll agree.
Otherwise, he's just stupid.
I'll agree with you there. But then they need to make more of it instead of just throw it away. Like, hey, he broke his back. He's all right now, but he's still pissed about it because you want to do it again. You know, and have it be like 2 seconds. And you know, it's...
Doom is also one of the weakest of the animated films. So,
yeah, it was just like a below average episode of Justice League. It wasn't really anything special.
So I mean we're talking substandard. He gets a substandard introduction. Yeah, okay. They mentioned it.
I was just curious about how much it was kind of known within the culturally significant to casual fans. But anyways, we're moving on here because we are talking about Batman. I was just throwing that out as an aside. We're going to talk about a few different things. We're going to talk about favorite Batman stories of the 90s and 2000 to the present day. We're going to talk about some of our favorite artists and writers, some supporting characters, favorite B-level villains. We're going to try and avoid the really, really obvious books because everybody discussed that and just have some fun here. So guys, what do you guys want to talk about first? Anybody have something that they're like just anxious to talk about? They're like, oh yeah, let's talk this. I love Batman. Blah, blah, blah.
Who's Batman?
That was convincing.
Catman in The Secret Six is awesome. I can't believe we're doing a whole show around him.
Okay, so we're going to start off talking about some of our favorite Batman stories from the 80s. Anybody have one that they want to start with?
I'll throw a one. How about Sam Hamm's run on the Batman when he did Blind Justice? I'm always on the border. Is this a good Batman story or not? It has mind control, not a traditional element of a Batman story. Yet I have the trade on my shelf as one of the ones I always go back to.
Well, Sam Hamm is largely known as a screenwriter for a film screenwriter. Obviously, didn't he do the original Batman, the 1989 Batman?
He wrote the good parts of the 1989 Batman.
Good parts, yeah.
I blamed him for years for a part that was actually someone else's writing. So that's
which part was that?
That the Joker killed Batman's parents was not Sam Hamm's writing. That was one of the people that did a polish was added that gem.
That was a hack.
You're really upset about that, are you?
My least favorite part of any Batman movie. Bat nipples are better than Joker killed Batman.
Really? Bat codpiece too?
Yep.
Bat thong?
Bat shark repellent. It's all better.
All better.
Well, of course bat better. Shark repellent
a
is better.
A plant-inspired Bane? That's Bane was pretty bad.
Still better.
So what was the name of the storyline again, Chris?
Blind Justice.
Yeah, I don't think I even remember that one. Either one of you two remember it?
I remember the name. I'm just trying to remember the plot.
I have a vague recollection, but when I was going through and doing just some reading on Batman before the show, I will admit that it appears a lot on people's top 25 lists of Batman stories. So it is well remembered.
So, Chris, what is the plot of this storyline that we're having trouble recalling?
Basically, Batman is put out of commission, and he is forced to...
Was his back broken?
No, he was just injured, and he was forced to use a device he considered unethical that Wayne Enterprises was developing and he was trying to shut down at the same time, to take over the body of another human being, voluntarily, of course, and be the Batman to defeat evil. It was interesting because Batman is always in control, yet He fights for personal rights and freedom. And it was just sort of examining what the Batman was, where he draws lines. I thought it was a really interesting story.
Well, then why do you question whether or not it's any good?
Well, it has to do with mind control. It's a little bit more science fiction-y than most of the Batman stories that come to mind immediately. There is no big bad in it. Usually you can point to, you know, this is a Joker story or this is a Bane story. There's a variety of things going on within the story, and it's more about moral and ambiguity, which I like about this story. I also think the story is a little bit dated, the way they do it. And I was wondering if anyone had read it more recently than, or read it recently and can comment on these. And
I don't think I've read it at all. Do you guys think you've even read it at all?
I probably read it back in the day.
Yeah, I feel like I've read it, but I can't.
It's memorable. Left a mark.
Apparently.
So what is it? I think it's got to go on one of the lists that people then, ourselves and other people listening, and if they haven't and aren't familiar with it, Chris, that they should go and track down and give a shot to. What else? What about you guys? Have you guys got any that from the 80s that you think of?
I think my favorite part of the 80s was that it was the development of the miniseries within a series, which is something I wish would come back. A couple of writers use it, but not many that actually just have, you know, this is part three of four of an arc, and actually just slap that on the cover, do the whole bit. And it came out of the books that we're not talking about because, you know, everyone knows, but year one was not a miniseries. Year one was four issues of Batman. Year two was four issues of in Detective, or was it still in Batman?
No, I'm pretty sure it was. I feel like it was Detective.
Think it was, yeah.
Yeah, year two was in Batman. And then year three was in both, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
And
I've never read year three. Is it worth a pickup?
Year three is the one that leads into Lonely Place of Dying. It's the beginnings of Tim Drake. Because it's the Robin story. It's the origin of Dick Grayson.
But I just have to say, year two, I feel bad for year two. Because everybody, if that wasn't called year two, I'd be like, that's not a bad Batman story. It's not great, not overly memorable, but it's not terrible. But it's year two, and year one's the greatest Batman story ever. So everyone's like, oh man, it sucks. Look at, that's year one, the best.
Yeah.
And this thing, you know. Anyways, go on, Keith.
It's a great story, yeah. And there's a couple, they revisit that book a couple of times.
Some of the stuff that, I think it was Mike W. Barr who actually wrote year two. If memory serves. Some of the stuff that he's introduced there, maybe it's not the best story, but certainly it's become important in the Batman lore.
I believe out of continuity, they added Batman Along Halloween instead.
Batman's history is a lot more liquid than a lot of DC characters. And it's funny that, you know, when you say that Batman didn't reboot in the New 52. He rebooted every couple of years, three New 52.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like hundreds of issues of Legends of the Dark Knight, which were sort of in continuity if you felt like they were in continuity. But along with those miniseries, we also had, like I said, Lonely Place of Dying and Many Deaths of the Batman, actually, which is one of my top Batman stories. John Byrne, where there's someone's killing the people who taught Bruce Wayne. His various mentors, people that taught him various skills as he was training to be Batman. And they start turning up dead, dressed in Batman costumes. So clearly someone has put these people together with the genesis of Batman.
You know, now you mentioned that was a great story, and I didn't realize it was Byrne. Like, I didn't remember the details of it that well, but yeah,
it's a Byrne covers and writing, and I want to say Jim Aparo doing art. I think it's Jim Aparo.
It's about that right time for sure.
And a story that was in the Superman books, which is one of my all-time favorite Superman and Batman stories. It's called Dark Knight Over Metropolis. And it is the, as they were slowly developing the relationship between these two characters, it actually took quite a lot of years from the reboot to develop how these two characters interacted instead of just the assumed they're good friends.
Yeah, and it definitely wasn't the world's finest at all.
No, it took a long time to build that, yeah. And Dark Knight Over Metropolis is the storyline in which they get a hold of Lex Luthor's kryptonite ring, and at the end of the story, Superman gives it to Batman and says, "This is the this because I trust you. You're the one that stops me if I go too far." It's the quintessential relationship from then on between those two characters.
When we talk about Batman Doom, that is the final scene in Batman Doom. Is him giving him a piece of kryptonite still again to Batman. So again, that's a legendary, iconic moment. That's all good stuff, Keith. I got a few that I'd like to go to here. Probably as a few too, but Gotham by Gaslight came out just before the 80s ended, and created Elseworlds, and that was Brian Augustine. That was a great story.
I actually like the sequel Batman Houdini a lot better than Gotham by Gaslight.
That was good too. That was good too, and of course that would fit in the 90s. Where we started to get a lot of these Elseworld books, and a lot with Batman, and some great ones. Gotham by Gaslight is important, and that came out in the late 90s. I'm, of course, a big Jim Starlin fan, so Batman the Cult, for me, from the 80s, definitely up there. I also love 10 Nights of the Beast at the time with the KG Beast, but I don't know that the KG Beast can translate to the current modern day and age, and that story will hold up. It might be dated since the relationship with the Soviet Union has changed so much.
How do you new 52 KG Beast when currently Batman is only slightly older? It would have been like 3 when the Soviet Union fell.
Yeah, it kind of is one of those ones where I don't know that it could. But the time, the Cult I think was excellent.
I'd love to see a new 52 KG Beast.
If they could figure out a way, yeah. I thought it was a really cool character. They turned him into a character who could be beaten up by anybody. But that very first run, he was a character who was on equal footing with Batman and dedicated. He cut off his hand to get away without any thought. It was like, that was different. That was a moment that I'll never forget. So it was like, holy shit, you just don't see stuff like that, in these books.
Very controversial ending to that book as well.
Yeah.
Extremely controversial.
Don't give it away. But so those are some of the ones that I definitely think of.
Well, when I think of the 1980s, I think of a lot of me starting to get into comics and collect Batman. But one of the reasons that I was interested in collecting Batman is, there's two reasons, I guess, is and they're both the giant special issues. I think of Batman 400. And I also think of Detective Comics 572. So 572 is the one that has Batman meeting up with Sherlock Holmes, which I thought was a very cool story. And then Batman 400 was just this, really giant multi-story thing with a million different artists on it. And I just remember the striking cover, and I just thought that it was really neat. It was one of those cases where, especially as a young buyer, looking when you're in the comic book store and you can see these like double sized issues and special anniversary, especially with Batman. 400 and 572 issues. That was that's a lot, and that actually meant something back then. But it's such a shame that 500 of Batman wasn't very good, but but 400 was.
Those are good, Brett. Prey in Legends of the Dark Knight, I think, started in 89 and finished in 90. And that was with Hugo Strange and Doug Munch? You ever figure out how to pronounce this guy's name?
No.
No? Never did.
I knew some of them pronounced it Minnick.
Okay. Oh. Well, this fella wrote Prey, Dr. Hugo Strange. This was an awesome story. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if it counts as a 90s story or an 80s story, because it's kind of right in the middle, but
I know it's early 90s if nothing else, so it works then by itself as a segue go into the 90s. But
well, it's Legends of the Dark Knight launched in 89, and it was within the first year. It was like issue 7 or something like that.
It was, yeah.
I think it's like, you know, I can't remember exactly where it was, but yeah. Who were those other ones? What the Morrison did an early
Morrison did the Dark Knight Gothic. And Gothic. There's another one
with Mr. Whisper. Mr. Whisper, is that the name of the?
Let's not forget the first story arc, Shaman. One of my favorite.
That was Denny O'Neill.
I love that story. It's one of the definitive Who is Batman stories.
I also really like the Venom story from there.
Yeah, that would be in the 90s, yeah. But I mean, that's another one. I mean, again, I think a lot of like these stories, I think a lot of the stories that they did in these Legends of the Dark Knight were probably ended up becoming part of the greater legend of Batman that exists today.
Yeah, I think it's really easy for for us all to pick out Legends of the Dark Knight as a place that we would, you know, go back quite a bit for really good storytelling, especially for those first, 30, 40 issues. Yeah.
Yeah, really good stuff.
And again, but, great, I mean, because they were
even,
all...
Even the later ones, you still had great storytelling. I think that's the whole series, till they sort of started folding with the rest of the Batmobile, is excellent. I mean, you got Grant Morrison writing stories in the later issues still.
Well, let's move into then. Let's segue from the 80s to the 90s then. Because, I mean, I know, Legends of the Dark Knight, Venom would have been in the 90s, because I think that would have been the second year of Legends of the Dark Knight. And that story, that was Denny O'Neill for sure again. And that was just great. And, of course, not only is it a great Batman story, but it laid the groundwork for the Bane character to come later. Brett, remember the one, I think it was Legends of the Dark Knight 125. It was J.M. DeMatteis, and it was a Joker story.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's unbelievably good.
Well, DeMatteis, yeah, if he's going to take on the Batman, then you know it's going to be good.
And the Joker.
Yeah.
It's going to be damn good. Like that, there was definitely some legendary stuff all through that run. How about the 90s? What do you think of, Brent?
One of the interesting things that I think of, and it's not... I mean, they made a comic book out of it, but I'm going to say that that it's actually Andrew Vax and his
Ultimate Evil.
Ultimate Evil, yeah.
Thank you. One of my favorite. I love that book.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book, and I mean, and Andrew Vax certainly does a lot with against the whole child pornography and also just child. The child trafficking. And so it's Batman getting involved in that. And so, I mean, it's a really good book. I don't think that the comic book is as well done, but I certainly appreciate that. And that was from the 90s.
Actually, the audio book of that is readily available. And I think it surpasses the book.
Wow.
They actually have actors come in and do all the parts.
Well, that's what DC did with the like, Kingdom Come and all these other ones.
Of the graphic audios?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did that regularly. They did such a good job.
I'm listening to one of those right now. Actually, I'm listening to No Man's Land graphic audio. Because I've never actually read No Man's Land, and I figured that this is going to be the way to...
It might be better.
So it's the one without Chuck Dixon.
I actually really like No Man's Land.
Yeah, I actually like it as well. I think it's did it come out in the 90s or is that 2000?
It came out 98.
90. Yeah, 98 was Cataclysm, 99 was No Man's Land.
Yeah, see, because
I liked it so much when they did the little apple bit in the last Batman movie. I got pissed off that the whole point of that moment was changed.
Well, you know what? It was one when Cataclysm happened. I was like, this is going to be stupid. Like, what a stupid idea. That's stupid. And then it happened. Everybody's like, this is really good. And I wouldn't try it for the longest time. Same with No Man's Land. But eventually I just looked at the people who are working on it. I'm like, Greg Rucka, I got to try this. And it was great.
Wait, what I find...
Devin Grayson. Gold.
Well, she had some good stuff.
I found something very strange about No Man's Land, though. It is not a year before they did Contagion, which is basically the same story, but smaller.
Yeah, well, this time they did it. Yeah, exactly. But that is the point. Yeah, it's bigger and better.
Both have, but it's basically the same story.
Well, I mean, the thing was they wanted to redefine the city of Gotham. That's what it was about. Just like at the same time, they were redefining Metropolis as the city of tomorrow. Like, they were really going through and made a change there, too, from it being just a great big city to really being a city that lived up to the name of the city of tomorrow. And you know, they had big changes there, too. So, I think No Man's Land is easy one to forget. I mean...
I'll just throw this in there. I think the Legends of the Dark Knight story that you're talking about with DeMatteis is going sane.
Going sane. I think you're right. That sounds right. What issues was that?
65 to 70.
65 to 70. Okay. So I thought it was even later in that.
Yeah. And
going sane. That sounds awesome.
Joe Staton.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would explain it, too, because I'm always a big fan of Joe Staton.
Yeah.
I do think in the 90s that Batman developed, too many supporting characters. Like they really kind of drifted away from like that many supporting characters lightened the character. He wasn't the stoic, dark, Frank Miller-ish version that he had been for so long. And you know, there's good and bad parts to that, but they had him in the light a lot more, and and they really developed such a large cast of characters. Not only all of, like, you know, there were 10 characters or something at one point. There's a reference in the No Man's Land that I'm listening to that there are 11 bats in the city at that point.
But it gets worse in the 2000s. I mean, I got pissed off when the spoiler was around. Spoiler and Batwoman were around then.
But that's it, though. I mean, you had like Huntress was really, really tied in that. You had, you know, like you say, Nightwing, and you had your... Yeah, I mean, you're right. There was a lot of supporting characters there.
Yeah.
No Man's Land is where we got the new Batwoman, too, isn't it? Or Batgirl?
The new Batgirl. Yeah. Cassandra Cain was in that.
Yeah, that's where she debuted.
We still had Oracle. We had Nightwing. We still had Azrael.
Azrael, that's right.
Trailing along behind. Who never fit, but they just kept dragging that character around for like 10 years after.
Yeah, I mean,
after Nightfall,
he wasn't so bad before. Like, I remember when they introduced the Azrael character, and he was kind of interesting. And I certainly remember that there was a lot of, you know, especially when it came out that he was. I mean, issue 500 when he became Batman, but you know, when they
you could have bought a house with the Sword of Azrael issues at that
point. Exactly. I mean, it was huge. I mean, they weren't amazing, but they were certainly better.
Also,
than...
I believe the art was Quesada, was early Quesada.
Yeah.
It was early Quesada.
And that was a big deal, the writer too. Pardon me?
I was going to say the writer was Denny O'Neill, but that was later.
Denny O'Neill, I don't think he did that Sword of Azrael, but he did. No, he might have been Chuck Dixon. I would not be surprised, because Chuck Dixon did the Bane origin story graphic novel.
I wanted to talk about the Bane, the one-shot Vengeance of Bane goes down as one of my favorite comics, despite the fact that it's written by Chuck Dixon. I think Chuck Dixon.
Sword of Azrael is written by Denny O'Neill.
It is written by, okay, and then he wrote the entire 75-issue run, didn't he?
I think he did, actually. Yeah.
And that's probably why it lasted 75 issues. So they're like, it's Denny O'Neill, we owe him. You can keep going. Telling his stories, even if nobody's buying.
Much of Nightfall, though, was definitely written by Chuck Dixon. So, you know, I think we can foist a lot of that blame over
there. And Vengeance of Bane was absolutely written by Chris.
I will say that, I mean, Chuck Dixon.
Oh, yeah.
I won't revisit Chuck Dixon work. It was enjoyable comic booky monthly serialized stuff. It was soap opery and and I can't revisit any of it, but you know, I really enjoyed his Tim Drake stuff. He wrote a lot of the early Tim Drake stories.
Well, yeah, he really did. Yeah, the Tim Drake first 50 issues or something like that of his solo series, I think he did.
At least.
And it was really good.
But they're popcorn comics. I mean,
they are, but it's good.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I quit Chuck Dixon about 3 years ago. I definitely said, good writer, I'm done. Chuck Dixon has no more to offer me. He has shown me everything he can do.
Thing is, like you say, I would always pick up a Chuck Dixon book, go, it's going to be good, it's never going to be great, but it'll always be good. And he'd be writing 70 books a month. Like, the guy was his output was insane. I think that's part of the problems why he doesn't get the respect, you know, is because it's like, how could he have been if he hadn't written so many damn books, type of deal, or how good can he be when he's writing this many? But to get back to the topic, I mean, back then it was Chuck Dixon. At the same time there, early 90s, we're looking at the writers were Chuck Dixon, Alan Grant on Shadow of the Bat, and Doug Munch was doing, I think, Detective. Or was he doing Batman? I think he was doing Batman.
I think he was doing Batman, yeah.
Yeah, and it was Chuck Dixon on Detective. So, I mean, those are the guys who kind of put together Nightfall for us then. Doug Munch also did some of my other favorites from the 90s. I love the Red Rain. Elseworlds graphic novels. Where
Kelly freaking Batman. Jones Batman. That gets awesome.
Yeah, awesome stuff.
The Elseworlds stuff really just proved how unbreakable a character Batman is. Mm-hmm. You really only need a couple of very simple elements and Batman just works. He's very recognizable as Batman. You put on the pointy ears, you kill his parents, and you make him work at night. And it doesn't matter what else you do to that character, it's still going to be Batman. Yep. You put him in the Old West, you put those same things on Superman and you've got speeding bullets. and it just works though. It is like, mm-hmm. you know, Superman works almost as well. But some people have a problem with stuff like Red Sun because it still drifts too far from the central of the character. Batman doesn't seem to have that. You do an Elseworlds where Batman kills people, no problem. You do it where he's got superpowers, you do it where he's got Green Lantern's ring, it all still works.
I can't remember the name of it, but there's one, it was Max Allen Collins did a Batman Elseworlds where essentially he was a member of the Untouchables and he was taking down Al Capone.
Scar of the Bat.
Scar of the Bat, yeah. And he's shooting a gun and all this different stuff. But it does, like you say, it works because he's an unbreakable character.
Well, the funny thing is that you don't even need to do it out of continuity now. I mean, look at Grant Morrison. The Return of Bruce Wayne or something like that, and he basically like put Bruce Wayne into most of those scenarios anyways on his return back.
Well, that was Morrison's unique thought of Batman was he was approaching it as if every story ever told, every incontinuity story that was ever in continuity all happened. And that's so he, like when he was writing, he was drawing from, you know, as far back as the 40s and 50s for characters and concepts.
There was two more books that happened in the 90s that I got to mention, because I was a big fan of reading all the Grendel at the time, and the Batman Grendel I loved, but even more so the Batman Houdini. Oh, it's an incredible book.
I'm glad you didn't mention Batman Spawn.
Not an incredible book. But Batman Houdini was.
There were a lot of Batman crossover books.
There were Batman Aliens.
The company crossovers. Yeah. There's Spawn. It's not a Batman Aliens.
Totally.
No, there's a Superman Aliens. There's a Batman Predator.
There's three Batman Predators, but the first one was awesome.
I don't think there is a Batman Aliens. I know there's a Superman Aliens. There's Jordan.
I think you're right there, but
there definitely
but
is.
First time they did Batman Predator, I'll never forget that. Batman's sitting there and he knows he's being watched. He turns and he opens himself up like, go ahead and shoot me. And he has the red dot on him and he pulls away and he goes, Batman's in and goes, I get it then. If it's not a challenge, it's not a game, then it's, you know, type of deal that like he gets the rules of what he's facing then. And I loved Batman Predator.
Who did those books?
Pardon me?
Who did those books? Who were,
I don't really remember. I don't remember. I remember the art. I don't remember the artist. I just remember the style.
We had Batman Daredevil.
It's too bad. Yeah, that's right. It's
Tarzan.
Too bad we don't
Batman
have the,
Tarzan?
It's too bad we don't have the internet nearby. Oh, wait.
One of my favorites was Batman Starman Hellboy.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually released with the Starman Omnibus. Otherwise, I would have forgotten completely.
We are stuck this week, Mo, because Brett and I fired our researchers after the Fialkov fiasco.
Art by Dave Gibbons, and that makes sense because that explains why it was so. At least the first one. Let me see. Duel between Batman and Predator films, written by Dave Gibbons, art with by Andy Kubert.
Oh, isn't it the first? Isn't it Doug?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doug Monk.
No. It was the second one was Doug Monk with art by Paul Galassi, and the third one was Chuck Dixon. So there you go.
With art by whoever happened to be laying around the office that afternoon.
Yeah,
it really seems like it because it
those intercompany crossovers were a bit diminishing returns.
Well, it really was, yeah, yeah.
And Batman Aliens came out in 1997, written by Ron Mars with art by Bernie Wrightson.
Oh, there you go. No, I don't remember. I remember the Batman, Superman Aliens, because I thought they were really working hard to make these aliens a challenge for Superman. And Superman could take, with what had been kind of established, the aliens were tough for a human being, but not for Superman. They were working really hard to make it so he couldn't just blow them away. anyways, anything else from the 90s, guys? You want to move on to 2000 to present?
We did talk briefly about Prodigal. Prodigal, it was. I was frustrated when they finally made Dick Grayson Batman here just a couple of years ago because everyone was talking about it like it was such a cutting edge idea. And I was so frustrated when they did Prodigal because, back in those days, there was no internet. So the only thing you had was the previews magazine. That previews announced that Dick Grayson was going to be Batman. And everyone was like, we have to have the story. I have to see they're finally passing the torch. And then it's four issues long.
Well, the thing was, it didn't make any sense. I mean, he was Batman. His back was broken. Azrael took out Bane for him. He comes back, takes the mantle back from Azrael, who was going continually crazy. He's back. He's Batman. Then he's like, Dick Grayson, I don't know if I want this. I need a little more time to think. Take it. And it just – it was like, what? Why?
Because he comes back. He does 0 month.
Yeah.
The first time they did a 0 month, straight after 0 hour. And those are Bruce Wayne stories. And then you get four issues of Dick Grayson and Tim Drake. And then Dick Grayson basically goes one adventure and he's like, I don't think this is for me.
None of it makes sense.
It's not working out.
Yeah. Why did Batman give it to him then? Why would he decide now? You know what, how I gave it to that Azrael guy before and it was really forced? Well, here, take it now because I still don't want it. Why? Your back's fine. What's...
Thankfully, it's not really forced.
Sure, your back was shattered beyond repair, but walk it off.
Walk it off. And then when here's what pissed me off. When Prodigal Son was over and Batman took it over again, that was the first time they got rid of the trunks, the outside, and they just went to just tights, like a black tights, and it looked so much better. And people got so pissed off and wrote in that they changed it back to that awful-looking trunks. Thank God it's gone now. That was what pissed me off. I'm like, no, I don't care if it's tradition. It's so, so stupid. If it's stupid, you don't need to continue it.
Actually, I will say one other thing about the 90s is that it did give us, and it's not from the comics, but the Mask of the Phantasm movie, which I actually think helped out.
Oh, it's an awesome movie.
Yeah, watch that. Do not read year two. Better. Same story. Better. Mask of the Phantasm, year two. Down. Bad.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing from the 80s and 90s is the amount of Batman in outside of comics. I mean, we had the movies, of course, and then Batman the Animated Series, which to many people is, that's their version of Batman.
Well, and it gave us Harley Quinn, you know, which is, I mean.
Oh, it was great. It was such a great series. It was a great movie. It was, yeah, it was terrific.
Well, it's funny that Harley Quinn is one of the characters that gets pointed at as for negative comments in the New 52 because she was a beloved character from a children's TV show. But the TV show is like 15 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone that grew up with that is older. In their 20s.
Older. I mean, it's even more than 15, I think. But the other thing is, though, that you can't deny the importance of the style, both not just the animation style, though, that also, but just the style of the approach of how they did within building a continuity. And you know, I mean, we're used to superhero stories that were just one-offs, and Batman changed all that. And soon you had X-Men coming on, and it was doing storylines from the books and doing longer storylines. And since Spider-Man came along and was doing that, and then you had Superman animated series, and Batman made a huge influence on the way that cartoons changed the way storytelling was told in an approach that was still accessible to kids, but was now really, really within North America, because it's a, you know, we had this in Japan already, but it was really, really smart for adults, too, you know.
And Batman Black and White started in the 90s, so.
Yeah. Batman Black and White, great stuff in there.
If you dig around through Comixology, there's a bunch of those Black and White stories, 8-pagers, that are free on Comixology. Mm-hmm. Dig through it. And you dig through the hidden depths.
Yes. And you know what? There was also another book, Brent. It was the greatest. I think it was the greatest Batman stories ever told, and the greatest Joker stories ever told. And they were actually books.
Yep.
And they were done by different authors. And that was the first time I ever discovered, before even reading them, or second thing I ever discovered, actually, I think, after Jonah Hex. That was Joe R. Lansdale, one of my all-time favorites, did a great story in there. Those were great novels, too.
I love those. The prose ones, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the prose ones. Oh, it was a
not the collected. They did something like that. Maybe the greatest was. You're right. There was a greatest Batman stories and greatest. Those were collection of like the 40s, 50s, and 60s stories, mm-hmm. weren't they?
Yeah, because when I was comics. In Chicago, Matt gave me the hardcover of the Joker one, which is great volume. And I'm trying to remember. I do know exactly the ones you mean. I remember the cover. It came out around
they
the time.
They were so of good.
It was all yeah. It was a short story collection.
Yeah. Yeah, very good, very good.
Well, guys, you know what?
The Joe R. Lansdale one.
I think it was
happened in the suburbs or the desert, isn't it?
Pardon me. Well, he has a character. He had a character that was like digging a grave, and it was like a horror take on Batman. The one that really stood out to me was one where Joker was going to kill an entire studio audience, and Batman had to show up and tell a joke and make everybody laugh to get them released. It was, and it, you know, and that's not what he is. And he told the joke going into his parents, told a joke about his parents dying. And it was hilarious. And it was like the smartest story. I was like, it blew me away. Boy, I'd really like to remember the name of this damn book.
I say Adventures of the Batman.
The Further Adventures of Batman.
Thank you. That's it.
And
the Further Joker's Adventures of the Joker. Yep.
Those are them. So yeah, if anybody wants to buy me these on Amazon or eBay or anything, that'd be appreciated. Thank me for the cost of this show. we get it back in other ways. Anyways, guys, you know what? This topic, and we said this in the email, and we kind of were thinking to ourselves, this could be a two-parter. This has just become a two-parter. So we're wrapping it up now with the 90s. And we're going to go into Wii Views, which means we'll come back next week. We'll talk 2000 and beyond. We'll talk favorite artists, favorite writers, supporting characters, B characters, and see if it turns into a three-part show.
Yeah. Batman is apparently big and popular.
We can talk about Batman forever. And then after that, who knows? Maybe we'll do a spotlight on another character, too, if people really like these. I know that looking at some of the other most popular comic book podcasts out there, this is the type of thing people really get into. So, I mean, I'd love to do one on the Hulk guys, Captain America, Spider-Man, Justice League as a team, X-Men as a team, Fantastic Four as a team. What do you guys think? What are some characters that you'd like to do this with?
Superman.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
we could do lots on the various Justice Leagues.
Yeah, I think so. Justice Leagues, right up there for me.
Black Lightning?
Black Lightning. that's a five-parter right there. We need to... That'll be episodes 105 through 109. Black Lightning. Episode B, L, A, C, N, K.
Yes. We'll do an issue each.
I'd love to do it on Luke Cage and Power Man and Iron Fist. You know, I mean, I don't know if anybody else will be into it, but I'd love to do it. All right, Chris, any you'd like to do?
Solomon Grundy, but I think that would be about a quarter of an episode.
We can do it with the Black Lightning.
Do yourself a favor, Chris. If you are a Solomon Grundy fan, there was the Earth 2 issue of Solomon Grundy just came out. Do not read it.
Do not read it.
Do yourself a favor.
I looked at the cover. That was an after rec Solomon Grundy for me.
Oh, man, that cover is bad.
He was great in Earth 2. This issue is not great.
All right, guys. Well, let's move on to Wii Views because, Keith, we are...
Here I come to save the day.
Saving you from bad comments.
Keith, what do you want to talk about?
Oh, what do I want to talk about? Did we read comics this week? Were there comics that came out?
There was a couple.
I heard there was.
Let's talk about what was probably the most anticipated number one of the week, and let's talk about whether it should have been as anticipated. Alice Cott's Zero from Image Comics, Michael Walsh on art. And this is a spy book. It's a spy, war, soldiery kind of book. Which ultimately didn't work for me. It just doesn't pay off into anything. It felt like a weird war tales, like one of the Garth Ennis war stories, where stuff happens, but I didn't care at all for the main character. I didn't learn anything about him. He did some stuff. He was really tough. There's nothing about this book made me want to come back for another issue. It was fine, but it didn't. Nothing engaged me to revisit this character.
What about you, Chris?
It's a bad sign when I was actually rooting against the main characters in this book. I hated our protagonist. I hated his runners. I was cheering for the guys getting killed. They were the only ones with any modicum of human beingness about them. It could improve, but I'm not going to be there for issue two. Just depressing book.
Yeah, I mean, it's a book, one of those books that's like, okay, I suppose it also could have just been a one-shot and wrapped up right there. Like, I agree. Just really, it's a very violent book, unlikable characters. I don't think it's poorly done. And there's a scene near the end that is meant to be heart-wrenching, and I think it's well portrayed, and it did kind of get to me. That said, there is a sense that you've seen this all before. There's no sense that there's no hook. There's nothing original. There's nothing that I went, that's new. Not one thing where I thought, that's new, ever, in this book. That made me want, and that's what it needed to give me to make me want to come back. So I won't be. Brett?
To me, I just felt, as I was reading the book, because, you know, the story itself is just a story. It is what it is. But I just thought it was so gratuitous. There was so much gratuitous violence. There was gratuitous sex. There was just gratuitous everything chalked into this book. And it just was one of those cases where I was just like, wow, I don't need to see these panels. They don't even fit with the storytelling in the book. So I just, you know, it was just thrown in for shits and giggles. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, why was that extremely gratuitous sex scene there between characters that appeared to hate each other? And, you know, all of a sudden, I think it was Tyler James of the publisher of Comic Strive said, is there a new edict that's being come down from Image Comics that the way to get sales of the industry back up is to show more penis in all the books?
Well, they got that checked off. He put a off. Tweet
out of that.
Yep.
Yeah, he put a tweet out of that. And, you know, I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, I would never even consider reading a second issue of this.
Well, Brett, then would you consider reading a second issue of one of the other books?
Let's see now. Well, in the case of Buzzkill number one, by Donnie Cates and Mark Resnicek. In this case, I would actually consider reading another issue. This is one of those cases where it's a superhero that needs to be either drunk or stoned to use his powers. I actually thought that he was kind of a neat character, and I think the idea is pretty neat. So for me, this one, as much as the art was a little scratchy and sketchy, but I think the concept worked for me, and I would find it interesting to keep going.
It had a certain Gen X slacker feel to it, and I think that art helped, actually. Like, it might not have worked on some books, but for that reason, I think it did work on this book. And, I mean, it's not the first time I've seen the idea of a guy being drunk in order to get his powers.
Nope.
And, hey, Pint over and Scam did it, and we've heard about a few other ideas now. But
I think Garth Ennis did one, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not the first time, but this is told in a different way because it's not about the guy having his powers and you know, going out and kicking ass while he's drunk. It's about the guy sitting there going, you know what, I'm sick and tired of getting drunk and all the negative that being drunk actually gives me in my life. And this is a book that's very funny, and it's not a forced funny. It's a very human funny, and that was the part about it I liked it the most. I think it had a nice emotional core to it. I liked it. Keith. Chris. It's Chris's turn.
All right. I actually didn't like 21 pages of this book. It was basically learning about his life and how he didn't like getting drunk all the time. And then the last page happened, and it sort of hints where this series is going, and I want to go there. A marginal pass. I'm curious. But on a whole, I don't have a lot of hope. But I wanted that book with that Mo was explaining where it's a drunk guy kicking ass.
Or it's what, pardon me?
A drunk guy kicking ass with no consequences whatsoever. I just found the whining to the support group kind of boring.
As a guy who likes to get drunk and never whines about it, I see how that could be against you.
There's a Monkey Brain book that is that story, Chris. So take a peek for that.
Anyways, yeah, Keith.
I believe I didn't like that one either.
Well, what do you want then?
Yeah, I mean, you've
been given it. That reminded me of the boys without any of the good stuff.
I want a book exactly like this. I hate it. That sums up the average comic reader right there.
Pretty much, yeah.
I really like this book. I was quite interested in this angle of the character where he is trying to clean up. He's still in the early stages of recovery. But I really like. There's one line that really stuck with me, which is when he talks to the kind of Batman-ish character and says, "Creep's always doped up on painkillers. No one says shit to him."
It was awesome. Like I say, it's a very
that's my
funny
favorite
book.
Line book. That's my favorite
funny
line of
book. Book.
I'm in for the miniseries.
Yeah. All right, Keith. Well, you might as well talk about Kiss Me Satan, also from Dark Horse, like Buzzkill was. What do you think?
Kiss Me Satan. So I watched True Blood, and True Blood is about 20% really cool vampire story. And 80% nonsense stuff with werewolves and voodoo that sucks up the rest of the time because they don't have to pay those actors as much as they do the ones that are in the vampire story. This book is that 80% without the 20% that's any good. I hated this book so much. It was all of the things I don't like of modern non-horror supernatural. I jumped off this book halfway through, but made it through. Read to the end just to see if there's anything redeemable. There was not.
Chris?
Oh, loved it. what can I say? I loved it. I love the concept of an angel trying to get back into heaven. I normally hate werewolves, and I got a feeling there's a whole lot of werewolves being killed coming up. I love that crap. We got a cool car. What else do you need? This was just fun. Without any of the like normal supernatural seriousness that usually comes along with Dark Horse supernatural book. This is just bubblegum. I enjoyed it.
Well, this book's script is from Victor Gishler. I hope I'm saying it correct. Art is from Juan Ferreira. I like the art a lot. I really think that it had a really dynamic style, some interesting panels and use of the pages and you know, cut scenes. I think it was almost the best way to describe it. Action scenes, cut scenes, and different ways. I think it was laid out and looked really, really good. I think it had a really nice, fresh look to it, and I enjoyed that quite a bit. And I enjoyed the story, too. I've never seen True Blood. Maybe that helps, because it's just, to me, it was a lot of fun. And I don't know, it threw me into the story really, really fast with a lot of action, and then properly explained to me the world and the characters and why they're behaving the way they are as they go along. So, I mean, it was an absolute win for me, too. Brett, what do you think?
Well, I have seen a season of True Blood, and the 20% was nowhere near enough to get me to keep going to that series. I actually, God, I hated that show. But
I watched a whole season.
But I did watch a whole season just to see if I could. I watched it at work, you know. I was getting paid to watch it. But no, in the case of this book, I started reading it, and so I instantly like just kind of had one of those moments where it was like, oh great, vampires and werewolves. Oh, I hate them. And then I read some more, and I was kind of like, oh, vampires and werewolves. No, still hate them. And the story, as much as there's a couple of points in the story that I thought were reasonable, I hate vampires and werewolves. So so I'm going to go with I won't be touching this book again.
Interesting. All right, Brett, the final book we're going to talk about then, one that I didn't read actually because I'm reading the series and I'm way behind on it. So I didn't want it to ruin the series for me and read it out of order for me. So why don't we talk about the final book of the week, though, Brad?
Bloodshot and Hardcore number 14, which is our book that has our new everything for Bloodshot and Hardcore. Christos Gage and Joshua Dysart on the words, and then Emanuela Lupacino on art. And I will say that, the art is consistent with what I expect out of Valiant right now. And I thought that, I like the script. Actually, I thought that the story was pretty good. I don't know all that much about hardcore. I'm not too hardcore in my reading of the old Valiant. And I haven't read any that much of the new Valiant, but as a starting point, this is actually a really good starting point. I found it easy to jump into. I have just a basic knowledge of Bloodshot, but certainly if you read the Zero, then you're okay to set in with this book. And there's some characters, especially in the hardcore, that I actually did like. So for me, yeah, I actually enjoyed this book.
Chris?
I thought it was Keith. I have a tough time with this book. I can tell it is quality, and if you're into this kind of story, you'll like it. But a dry, militaristic story is not my bag in comic books, so I didn't find it all that enjoyable. I'd give it the same review I gave the Bloodshot Zero issue. Yeah, it's good, but I'm not going to continue reading it. It didn't have that moment that turned me around on it. That, you know, that magic moment. It was just, yeah, okay, I understood the story beginning to end, and it was there. It was a comic book, I guess, but it didn't throw me in the least. And they're still wearing red military costumes, which I, like, if you're going into battle, you never wear red. I don't care if you've got stealth magnolia or whatever. Red is a bad color no matter what. It just looks stupid. It bugs me.
Well, I know when I go into battle. that's not the color I choose.
I still can't get over the Chris said, it's a comic book, I guess.
Yeah.
I just that's fair. On this, we agree.
Nobody can deny this.
But I like that he held back just like 10% there though. He didn't commit fully to it's a comic book. He said I guess. in other words, he's conceding that yes, okay, fine, be that way. It's a comic book. I had been reading Bloodshot and I fell behind during the Harbinger Wars, and that's one of the reasons that I put this in. Was not only is it it's renaming, it's new creative team, etc. But I was curious how Valiant does jump on points. They haven't needed to because they've only been around for a year and a half. And I was very pleasantly surprised with. I don't feel like I'm gonna skip going back and reading Harbinger Wars. I have a basic idea. Everyone seems to have lived. That's all that really got spoiled for me as far as that went. This is really like starting at taking a new point and moving forward in it. They introduce all of these characters who I believe these are all, the first time you're seeing these characters. Maybe one of them has appeared before. Got a good sense of how their powers work. It's complicated how their powers work. So it needs a lot of unpacking. But introduce some interesting characters, a different interesting team dynamic, and I'll be curious where they go from here. I need to fill in some of that gap during this sale.
All right, well, sounds good. All right, guys. Final thoughts for the week. Brett.
There's a lot of Batman books. I realized that as I was having a look, it was just kind of like, okay, wow. I'll read all of those. Let's do that. Let's for episode 200,
every Batman book ever published by then. Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't that
sound? We have a lot of boring episodes between now and then because we have no read.
Yeah, exactly. We're just going
this
to
week.
Do
some comics came out.
Yeah.
I'm reading Batman.
Yeah, it'll just be we'll be talking
right
about
now,
five.
Our review of Batman issues 1 to 10.
Yeah. Perfect. Otherwise, I'm Brett _WeTalk. I did a new numbers game column for Marvel Comics on Comicosity. You could check that out, but that's it for me.
I'm Chris _WeTalk. I got nothing.
Keith?
I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter, and really had fun at the Red and White Club comic show on the weekend in Calgary, curated by Scott Kowalczyk. Who couldn't make it at the last minute. we did miss Scott, but amazing creators there.
He's been known to do this to us before.
And a lot of friends of the show, all the folks that were on the, aside from Scott, all the folks that were on the Chroma Creator Summit.
Which is, that makes it that much more amazing that Scott actually showed up for that.
The elusive Scott Kowalczyk, yeah. We have the Chroma Creator Summit. We've got to see Ryan Ferrier, who's got two comics on Comixology this week. Brothers James #1 and Tiger Lawyer #3 are both on Comixology. And Fiona Staples did a lovely sketch of a Jawa for me.
Nice.
I asked her to do a sketch and she could choose either Booster Gold or a Jawa. And she chose Jawa.
And how was Ben?
Ben was great. Ben had a book he had an art book and then sketches, some prints. So I got his book. Kurt Pierce was there with printed off copies of Theremin.
Do you lose money on these?
Kurt will have, as he said, printed off and stapled by Kurt Pierce.
They're collector's items.
We need Kurt on. We can't have Kurt. We need Kurt on sometime. Just him without, like, we can't have his, the brilliance that is Kurt, necessarily watered down by those other 9-10 comic book creators. Like, we need just Kurt. And we no questions and no topic and nothing. We'll just say hello and listen to him talk for a couple
stream
hours.
Stream of consciousness.
It'll be the easiest show we ever did and maybe the best.
He was telling me that what they're planning for Theremin for making up a full trade paperback. And he thinks that the last issue of Theremin will be like a crazy double or triple size issue and just every mad idea he can come up with that issue.
The guy's amazing. All right. Love it. Great. All right. Well, and you can email us at comics that we talk podcasts. And, you know, you can catch me at, I think, Keith, did you mention you're at Cub Reporter K?
He did. He's never on, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I respond to tweets.
At Mo _ we talk for me. M-O, no E on my name. Oh, you know, you can email or get me on Twitter there. Tell me what impression you would love me to butcher next.
Please, whatever you do, though, just make sure that he can only do a short impression. That would be nice.
Mo, can I make a suggestion?
Nope.
Silent movie star Greta something or other. Anyone from the silent area?
Greta Garbo?
Yeah. No. We know what her voice sounds like.
All right. Other than that, we're OUT.